Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
The 2022 elections were expected to result in a red wave cascading across the country, and while that may not have come to pass, Staten Islanders certainly did their part, with nearly two-thirds of borough voters casting Republican ballots in the congressional and gubernatorial races.
While the issues of crime didn't seem to do the trick for Republicans nationwide, I think here it did resonate with people. You know, if you look at the map, you're going to see a lot of red. You're going to see New York City, you're going to see, you know, Brooklyn, Manhattan, where all those heavy Democratic votes are, Albany, Syracuse, Buffalo in particular. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing that drives the election. So the fact that it was as close as it was, I think speaks to the fact that there are concerns out there among New Yorkers about bail reform in particular, about the crime that we're seeing, particularly crime in the subway, crime in big urban areas, whether it's Rochester or other places.
Welcome to the Staten Island Advances from the Scene, a podcast bringing you an inside look at the biggest stories on Staten Island with the reporters who cover them. I'm your host, Eric Bascom, and this week I'm joined by Staten Island Advance senior opinions writer Tom Robleski to discuss the results of Tuesday's elections and the implications they'll have on the future of our borough, our state, and our nation. Thanks for joining me today, Tom. You know, last time I had you on, we were voicing some cautious optimism about our Mets postseason chances, you know, but as we've come to expect, it all quickly came crashing down in pretty spectacular fashion. So before we get to the politics, any last thoughts on this year or looking ahead to next season?
Well, I mean, you know, it's a 162-game season, and then we realize it comes down to a game or two here and there, right? If we win a game against the Cubs, if DeGrom pitches better against Oakland, if Scherzer wins the game in the playoffs. So so that kind of disappointment is tough. But I have hope. I like the core of the team. I like the management. I like the owner. I like Buck Showalter. And just, Eric, I know I'm speaking from your heart as well as mine. Just thank God that the Philadelphia Phillies with Zach Wheeler, Bryce Harper, and Noah Syndergaard did not win the World Series, because that –
it would have been brutal.
I would have, and you know, they would have gotten their rings the first time we were in town.
I was just going to say that. They would have had us there scheduled for the first day of the season. So
the baseball gods at the end were kind, and even though the Astros won, and nobody will ever trust them again, but still, it could have been a lot worse.
Agreed. So we'll see what happens with some of the offseason moves. We've got a lot more to make. I know we got Diaz back, but there's still a lot out there.
I think you're going to see the Trey Turner, Brandon Nimmo swap. I think that's what you're going to see.
That'll be interesting. All right. So let's get into some of the election results. Let's start with the highly anticipated rematch between Rep. Nicole Malliotakis and former Congressman Max Rose. I think some people expected this race to be a little bit closer than it wound up being, in part because this seat has switched back and forth so much in recent years, right? But actually, Nicole won pretty handily with over 61% of the overall vote and 64% on Staten Island as of the last time I checked. So were you surprised by the margins here? And what are some things that, you know, you think Nicole may have learned from her first term that she can kind of bring into her second?
After a while, I think it seemed that the Democrats, again, with the red wave that was coming or people thought was going to be coming, I think sort of believed that this race was going to go Malliotakis's way. I didn't have like the special guest stars coming in here for Max Rose, the big infusion of outside money coming in, the big ad, you know, money coming in. So I think after a while they kind of figured that she was going to hold on to the seat. I still think, and she won the Brooklyn side of the district as well, which I think Republicans are also very encouraged about. And I just think that this is, you know, she had the support of former President Donald Trump, although after what happened Tuesday, we don't know how much that's going to, what kind of value that's going to have in the future. I'm a little bit surprised at it was such a big win. But again, seeing what else happened on Staten Island, seeing how Republicans came out to vote for Lee Zeldin, seeing how they came out to vote for Sam Pirozzolo in the mid on, I know we're going to get to some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I'm not surprised that kind and Democrat turnout seems to have been depressed on the North Shore if you look at some of the numbers. Mm-hmm. So I'm not terribly surprised that she finished the way she did.
Yeah, and so how would you kind of grade, or what do you think just of generally of Nicole's first term in office, and kind of what are you looking for from her as she moves into her second?
Well, it could be important because she could be the only member of the majority. It seems that the Republicans are going to gain control of the House of Representatives. It's going to be a much narrower majority than they thought that they would have. So she's going to be the only New York City representative who's going to be in the majority, although we've got now that they have, they got those seats on Long Island, those seats in the Hudson Valley. So there's, you could say that New York State is delivering the House of Representatives to the Republicans. So I think that could strengthen our hand. She's got more experience than some of the other folks who are going to be coming in as freshmen. I think overall she's become more polished. I mean, I covered her a lot when she was in the Assembly. You know, I think she's become more focused on her issues, how she presents herself, how she engages. I thought her acceptance speech or her victory speech the other night was very modulated, very professional. She didn't go out of her way to take another piece out of Max Rose. She didn't gloat. I mean, she took her piece out of Nancy Pelosi. That's to be expected.
I was speaking to people at the supermarket the other day. Just hearing their concerns, hearing what, quite frankly, the Democrats were not hearing. That they're struggling right now. That they're concerned about how much heat is going to cost this winter. That they're having difficulty paying for food for their families. That's what this race was always about. About stopping the disastrous policies that we've seen under one-party rule at the state level and at the federal level, and getting this country back on track.
So I think she's become a lot more of a polished politician and elected official, and she certainly is. She pays attention to what's going on in the district, and she pays attention to what's going on with her constituents.
Yeah, and you know, just briefly before we move on, what do you think might be next for Max Rose? Obviously, this is a lot of theorizing here, but has there been any indication as to what he could be looking into next?
I think it's kind of tough when you get the two losses in a row. Mm-hmm. And again, he was not a Staten Islander. That's not a knock against him, but he does not have that natural constituency here that he would have had, like Maliotakis, like so many of our other elected officials. They grew up here, they went to school here, they have all those networks here, they worked here perhaps, so had a business here, like with Sam Pirozzolo. And so I'm not sure if that, and 2024, depending on who the top of the ticket is, it's gonna be a presidential election year, whether it's Trump or DeSantis at the top of the ticket, I would expect Staten Island to still be voting Republican in that. So anybody looking at that race and seeing what happened with Max Rose this year, even though there was not a tremendous, you know, you didn't have like the blood pouring out of the elevator doors and the shining kind of red wave that people were sort of anticipating. They're going to look at that race and say, I think I'm going to save my money. And plus, now that she's been reelected, unseating a House member is, you're talking 90-95% they get reelected. So it's going to be a very tough race, I think, next time. And I don't think Max Rose with two losses in a row is going to be first and only on anybody's list.
Yeah, that's a great point. And so, you know, there are some other Staten Island specific races that we're going to touch on. But before, I think we should talk about the governor's race where, you know, Kathy Hochul became the first woman ever elected governor of New York. So, as everyone knows, she's been serving as governor for a while now after all of the scandals surrounding former Governor Andrew Cuomo. But now she's been officially elected to the post. So it certainly wasn't an easy win, though, with the Republican challenger Lee Zeldin, as you mentioned, receiving roughly 47% of the vote statewide and, you know, 66% here on Staten Island, which is, I don't think, too surprising, but still a pretty big number. So can you just give us some thoughts on how this all played out and why it was so much closer than some other recent New York races for governor?
Well, I think you have to remember as well that while Governor Hochul is the governor, she was never elected governor. I mean, she'd been a congresswoman and other offices. So she didn't have a statewide constituency. And she'd never really run state, you know, really vote for the lieutenant governor. They're just on the ticket.
Yeah.
So I think that played into it. Also, I think while the issues of crime didn't seem to do the trick for Republicans nationwide and inflation, but it was less so when you're, you know, Zeldin pretty much focused so much on crime, bail reform, criminal justice reform. So while I think that message didn't resonate nationwide, I think here it did resonate with people. And again, I think if you look at the map, Governor Hochul won 13 counties in the state, where Zeldin won 49 or whatever the math is. There's 62 total. So forgive my math, but that's it's roughly, if you look at the map, you're going to see a lot of red. You're going to see New York City, you're going to see, you know, Brooklyn, Manhattan, where all those heavy Democratic votes are, Albany, Syracuse, Buffalo in particular. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of thing that drives the election. So the fact that it was as close as it was, I think speaks to the fact that there are concerns out there among New Yorkers about bail reform in particular, about the crime that we're seeing, particularly crime in the subway, crime in big urban areas, whether it's Rochester or other places. So I think that she should keep that in mind as she goes forward.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that the crime aspect of it probably did play a little stronger here than it does in other parts of the country, as you mentioned, because of the, you know, we've seen so much of the subway situation. We've seen it on the news every day of a different person either getting assaulted or pushed in front of the tracks or whatever it might be. But it did just feel very constant over the past few months here in New York City. So I think that really played for him stronger than it may have.
And there are plenty of us who remember the 80s and the 90s. When things really were bad and you had 2,000 murders in 1990 or whatever the exact number was. You know, and it's like when you watch an old movie from the 70s, right, Taxi Driver or whatever, it's like city was really like that and people remember that. And these things happen incrementally. It's like, you know how do you get to 2,000 murders a year? Well, it's little by little and then all at once. Mm-hmm. And I think people were concerned about stopping it sooner before it gets worse.
Yeah, that's a great point.
We'll be right back. The Mayor of Maple Avenue is a powerful multi-part podcast about Sean Sinise, a victim of former Penn State football coach Jerry Sandusky, who was arrested 10 years ago for numerous child sexual abuse charges. The podcast series is written and hosted by Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Sarah Ganim, who takes listeners into the world of addiction rehabilitation, where society can be quick to celebrate the consequences for abusers while not addressing the needs of their victims. Subscribe now to the Mayor of Maple Avenue wherever you get your podcasts.
And so moving back to some of the Staten Island stuff, there were two openings in the state legislature this year, one with Assemblyman Michael Cusick leaving office and then the other with State Senator Diane Savino electing to do the same. So in that Mid-Island Assembly race, Republican Sam Pirizzolo beat out Democrat Vincent Argenziano with roughly 55% of the vote. Were you surprised to see this seat turn red?
I think we expected that Sam Pirizzolo would win that race. The seat's been withdrawn, you know, has been redrawn, obviously, with redistricting. I think they tried to make it a little more Democratic. You know, Mike Cusick had a close race last time he ran. Now, I don't know what his thinking was, whether he's got a better opportunity. We don't know what he's doing post his legislative career, but he may have been concerned that the seat was not really as winnable. Now, don't forget, that seat was created in 1982, I believe, was the first time you had a Mid-Island Assembly election on Staten Island. Eric Vitaliano, who's now a federal judge, the Democrat, won that, held that seat until he went into the civil court, and then Cusick took it over. So since 1983, it's been Democrat held, and only two people.
Only two people
in total. Now, it's not the same boundaries, but that city council district in the Mid-Island on Staten Island has been Republican since
the entire time. Yeah.
You know, and now Cusick is an old line, you know, Democratic guy, Democratic family, grew up in politics, and had that seat. I thought, and the thinking here, and I discussed this a lot with our political reporter Paul Yoda as well. Once that kind of Cusick name was pulled away from that seat, I think it was pretty much open season, and you know, Republicans in that, you know, there's a lot of Republicans and swing voters in that district. It's always been the swing district on Staten Island. North Shore Democrat, South Shore Republican, and the Mid Island is where island wide seats get won. And I think that that seat probably is going to be a tough regain for Democrats going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, speaking about Pirizzolo for a little bit, for some of our listeners who may not be too familiar with him, he doesn't really have a ton of prior political experience, right? So how do you feel, how equipped do you think he is going into this job, considering that?
Well, I actually had this discussion with Tracy Porporo, who is the supervisor of our public advocacy and politics and public affairs team. There's the Cusick model. Right, in politics, where you kind of grow up in the business, you are somebody's aide. He worked for Senator Schumer. He worked for other folks here on Staten Island. Steve Matteo was like that. Other folks, or you have somebody who comes out of a business background or a professional background, like Sam Pirizzolo. Now, he was on the Community Education Council, so that gets him plenty of networking with parents, political types. Mm-hmm. He had the optometry business, which is in Queens. But you know, he has business contacts as well. So he's a little older. His kids are older. So these are also the type of people who tend then. Well, now what do I want to do? I want to serve. I want to be in public mm-hmm. service. So I think you take a different kind of experience into politics mm-hmm. when you've made a budget, you know, hired and fired people, been responsible, you know, for a business, or when you've learned the legislative ins and outs and the political ins and outs as a staffer or something else. So I think, you know, on balance, it could be just, you know, six of one, half a dozen of another.
Yeah, that's a great point. While he may not have the political experience that you think of, there's so much other experience that he does have throughout, you know, his life and his career that he can bring to this post. So
Michael Bloomberg, Donald yeah. Trump, I mean, you know, not to throw, you know, heated names around, but, you know, right. these are people who come from non-political backgrounds, but they have an achievement that they said, you know, I did this. Mm-hmm. I did this business, or I created this, or I did that. So I think that also appeals to voters as well.
Yeah. And so let's move on to the race to replace State Senator Diane Savino. So on election night, we had Democrat Jessica Scarsella Spanton declare victory over Republican Joe Tirone. But Tirone did not concede right away because right. Jessica was only holding about 51% of the vote. And there were still absentee ballots. There were still 5% of scanners not reporting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like Q6, this district has been blue for a long time, right? So I'm curious, you know, why you think things were as close as they were, considering this, as you said, the Mid-Island tends to be kind of that swing spot, mm-hmm. or you could understand why it might be. Considering she's North Shore and Brooklyn, primarily this seat, right? I think it might have been a little more surprising for people. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts on that?
You know, Jessica is a first-time candidate. She wasn't really teed up for this race necessarily. I think when Senator Savino announced her retirement from elective office for the moment. These folks could come back, obviously.
Yeah.
I think the smart money and the immediate thought was that somebody like Charles Fall, you know, the assemblyman would be kind of teed up for this
right.
for this seat. It's a prestige seat. I understand that there was some, you know, back and forth, you know, discussions or, you know, whatever, how these things happen in politics. There are certain things that they do, certain things that they don't do. So it turns out that he, you know, doesn't want to run for the seat. And then we had the primary with Jessica and Bianca, and who was Charles's significant other, for lack of a better term. So mm-hmm. I think that getting that slow start for, mm-hmm. for Jessica, it's not like Jessica's been sitting there for 2 years, 3 years, saying like, okay, I know Diane's right. leaving, so I'm going to have all my ducks in a row. So I think that has to do with it. The fact that she's never run for public office before, was not currently in Senator Savino's office at the time. And I do think, again, that there's some thought on Staten Island that there needed to be, if not a clean sweep, there needs to be some kind of change, that they were more open to a Republican message. You know, the Brooklyn side of the district is very Democratic, but there are pockets that Tirone is speaking about where he feels like, you know, he can do well, and there's places where there may still be votes coming out for him. Mm-hmm. So I could see, if, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting in, it's 51-49 in a district that's true blue as any other district you're going to see, I'm going to want to see every last vote counted as well. But I think there are a lot of factors, and Tirone is well known as the family, the shoe business, that a lot of everybody who had kids in Catholic school or went to Catholic school, you bought your shoes there. He's a realtor. He's got the business connections. You know, he had the Conservative Party support. And again, I think he benefited from the rising tide of the Zeldin vote wherever it was had. And so I don't blame him for that. But when all the votes are counted, I think she's probably going to hang on.
Yeah, I would tend to agree there. But, you know, more generally speaking, I'm curious just kind of what you think Q6 and Savino's departures kind of mean for the borough's political landscape moving forward, because these are two people that have been in those positions for so long.
Well, this has been like a cycle. I've been at the paper 25 years, whatever it is. So I've kind of seen when the other venerable August members of Vitaliano, Betty Connolly, John Markey, that whole generation. And now this generation is starting to not age out necessarily, but they're starting to, because they're still both plenty young mm-hmm. Compared to some other folks. And, you know, Jimmy Otto is no longer sort of on the scene mm-hmm. here. Listen, you're losing a lot of experience. You're losing a lot of legislative know-how. You're losing, and with Andy Lanza, Mike Cusick was a very powerful, Senator Lanza was a very powerful partner to get things done. I-STOP, the judicial district, the discounts on the bridge. You know, Senator Savino was one of the founding members of the Independent Democratic Conference. They worked with Republicans to get a lot of things passed that should have made progressives very happy, but made progressives very upset because they were working in cahoots with the Republicans. So and she's, you know, probably, you know, what you see is what you get in terms of a politician, very strong-minded, an outstanding fundraiser. Then she was a union worker before that, a social worker before that. So she had a lot of experience. They have a lot of Albany experience. They've been in the trenches. And right now, Charles Fall is the senior Democratic elected official on Staten Island, and Camilla Hanks after that. And Jessica, and also the Albany delegation is now going to be at least 4 Republicans and 2 Democrats. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that Jessica is going to win. So that's also the first time in a long time. Usually it was split 3-3. So of course, they're all going to be in the minority, the Republicans. So.
Right. And, you know, so all the other state legislators on Staten Island ran unopposed. You had State Senator Andrew mm-hmm. Lanza, Assemblyman Charles Fall, Assemblyman Michael Tenusis, and Assemblyman Mike Riley. So not really a whole lot to discuss there. But there were also a couple judge races here on Staten Island. So I was wondering if you had any thoughts on how those shook out.
The GOP has been very good lately at winning borough-wide seats, whether it's state Supreme Court seats or civil court seats on Staten Island, you know, as the borough has turned maybe more red, or particularly in the Trump years. I think they were very, very excited that Mary Kavanaugh won that island-wide city again, another civil court seat,
and fairly handily as well.
And
kind of in line with the Republican voting
going away, right? And,
yeah,
and absolutely
65%,
absolutely going away. And Republican rank and filers, they like the judicial stuff, as we can see from the local level to the state level, federal level, Supreme Court. When we talk about, you know, not to, you know, we talk about Roe v. Wade. That is a result of Republican focus on putting people in the judiciary wherever they can. Mm-hmm. So it's a very big thing for Republicans and for Republican voters. Now, the state Supreme Court races were sort of a wash because we had 2 new seats created, and we had Judge Judith McMahon running for a second term. The Democrats and the Republicans kind of fell back on an old model, and they decided to cross endorse everybody.
Yeah.
So there was a guarantee that Judge McMahon wouldn't get a race. Brendan Lantry got a Supreme Court seat, the former Republican Party chairman, and Ann Thompson, who was the first woman of color elected to state Supreme Court on Staten Island, also got a cross endorsement. So those races were, those races were gimmies, but still. Republicans have their hand on all those races as well.
Yeah. And, you know, as I mentioned in the open, although Staten Island voted overwhelmingly red, I think Republicans throughout many other parts of the country were left kind of disappointed by the outcomes of many of the races. So why do you think that the red wave, you know, didn't really come crashing down as hard as some may have expected? And what does that mean for the country over the next few years?
Well, I think a lot of people are pinning it on Donald Trump. I think that's going to be, whether it's true or not, I think that's what Republicans are going to make into their sort of mantra going forward. Now, mm-hmm. he lost, you know, the 2 big races in Pennsylvania, the Senate race and the gubernatorial race. Those were 2 of the prime Trump endorsements. Mm-hmm. Also, Herschel Walker in Georgia, that's going to a runoff. So, you know, I think, and Democrats put, right, they put 2 things basically at the center of their campaign appeals nationwide. Commercials, you could go to any state and you would have seen the same style of commercial. It was the abortion decision by the Supreme Court, Trump and Trump / January 6th.
Yep.
And I think that even Republicans, and many of whom have become disenchanted with Trump over the last couple of years, I think their thinking was, if we vote for Trump candidates and Trump can wake up on Wednesday morning and say, I delivered the House and the Senate mm-hmm. to the Republicans. That was going to widen the door opening for Trump running again for president, which I don't think, I mean, maybe a majority of Republicans might, but I don't think an overwhelming majority of people, I think they want to go with somebody like DeSantis. So I think in a way that was probably, and Trump put himself on the ballot just like Biden was on the ballot.
Yeah.
And Trump's constantly, you know, every endorsement event with a candidate turned into a Trump rally for president. And he's hinting every other day, I'm going to make it a big announcement. It's coming. It's coming. I think you can't ignore the fact, I think voters on both sides of the aisle, a lot are finally just saying, you know, I think it's time for us to move on. And maybe it's time to move on from Biden for Democrats too, and from Nancy Pelosi. They're all the same generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, DeSantis is what, 44? I mean, I think that is at least part of what was going on nationwide.
Yeah, it's a great point. And, you know, as we've discussed on some of our previous podcasts, election nights are a big deal for us here at The Advance. We have reporters and photographers stationed across
Chinese
the borough,
food, pizza.
Right?
Yeah, I know.
Amazing. That's the only reason I was here. So anyway, I know you were with the borough's Republican camp on Tuesday. So I was hoping you could kind of give us a feel for the event. What was the energy like in there? Were people happy with how the races were going, despite, you know, some of the bigger ones not necessarily leaning?
It's kind of tough because I was the political writer for so many years, and I got to basically choose where I wanted to go on election night.
Yeah.
I always had to sit like, who do I think is going to win? Or who do I think if they lose, it's going to be a more poignant or a more interesting thing? So, I figured that, Nicole Malliotakis was going to be the winner. I went there. It was at Libetti Post, which is interesting. It's an interesting place. The Republicans have had many, many of their county conventions and their nominating conventions mm-hmm. there. I don't remember them ever doing an election night there. And people said, you can't make this place look good. It's a VFW hall. It's a standard. It's lovely. Please, VFW guys, don't get upset.
Right. But it's just a hall.
It's a hall. Right. They put lights up and everything. I think they were very excited. I think, and I talked to a couple of folks, elected officials and other party people. I think they felt that Zeldin was going to fall just a little bit short. But they were very excited to see the Malliotakis win, obviously. And that was pretty much by 10 after 9, people pretty much saw how that was going. Mm-hmm. They were very excited to take that Mid-Island seat away from the day. Listen, it's like anything else. It's like beating the champ, right? When you're a boxer or in the World Series, it's like, I flipped the seat. I took it. It wasn't yeah. all, I took it away from somebody that they've had it for 40 years or whatever. So and they again, I think they're very much excited about the civil court win. The mood was good. I think they. At the moment, they saw the big DeSantis win. The national picture wasn't really shaken out yet. The Fetterman-Oz race was still kind of up in the air. So I think there was still a lot of but I think if you listened carefully, you could hear some of the air going out of the balloon where they're like, we're not waking up on top of the world tomorrow. We're going to be in a fight even if we win the Senate and even if we and winning the House, we're still going to be in a fight.
Yeah. And, before we go, I was wondering if there was just anything else that we haven't touched on yet that you found interesting or that Staten Islanders might want to keep an eye on moving forward.
Well, I think next year we're going to have a district attorney race with Mike McMahon. I assume he hasn't made a formal announcement. I assume that he's going to run for re-election. It's always a question. Now, he's been more on Staten Island side when it comes to bail reform and the criminal justice issues. He's not been like the other DAs. He's been more moderate. They'd probably call him a conservative Democrat, the other, DAs or Democrats around the city. So it'll be interesting to see whether he gets a challenge, whether he gets a left challenge, mm-hmm. Somebody take it, and whether the Republicans, people always talk about Senator Andrew Lanzi, he's a former prosecutor, wanting that seat, wanting to run. He didn't run when it was an open seat. So I don't know why you want to run when you've got a strong incumbent. So I think that, and that's pretty much alone on the ballot next year. There may be other races next year, but that's usually like, it's almost like the breather year for everybody because then the next year is the presidential and you start the city cycles and the state cycles again. But I think that's going to be a very, very interesting race on Staten Island next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me as always, Tom, and I look forward to having you back on soon.
Yeah, and sorry about your Brooklyn Nets. We'll talk about them another time, it's impossible to root for them. I'm sorry.
It certainly is.
Thanks for the invite. I always appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Staten Island Advances from the Scene. If you like what you've heard, please make sure to rate and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and visit silive.com for the latest on all these stories and more. Thank you for supporting local journalism.